From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, after so many predictions that the state is running out of power, the new electric forecast has suddenly got much brighter. Why is the state's largest chain of charter schools taking public money to teach creationism? And the new state almanac is published. It's so good, it's banned from Texas prisons. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For years, Texas has struggled with how to ramp up to deal with a predicted energy crunch. The trend looked like there weren't enough power-generating plants in the state that could meet expected demand. But those forecasts have changed. The state's supplies now appear adequate. Despite a growing population and a booming economy and few new power plants, power demand hasn't grown as fast as expected. For State Impact Texas, KUT's Terrence Henry takes a look at what's behind this new trend.
To understand why power demand in Texas isn't growing as much as expected, it helps to remember sunny summer days.
Our electricity problems in Texas are almost entirely because of air conditioning in the afternoons in the summer.
Michael Weber is deputy director of the Energy Institute at the University of Texas. He says the problem isn't necessarily that we don't have enough power to meet demand. It's those long, hot Texas summer afternoons.
In fact, the whole year we have an excess of electricity except for a few hours in a few weeks of the year.
And that problem with the Texas market isn't unique. There's inefficiency throughout the country.
So across the nation, we have something like $1 trillion of capital in our power plants, and we use those power plants on average 42% of the time. This is incredibly irrational.
But a recent development could change how those power plants are used. It's called demand response, and it sounds a little something like this.
You have a message from Nest. Austin Energy expects a rush hour tomorrow from 3:45 p.m. to 5:45 p.m. Your Nest will automatically adjust the temperature around the rush hour.
That message was from my Nest smart thermostat. I was one of about 2,000 people in Austin who got it one afternoon last August as part of a pilot program with Austin Energy. The forecast for the next day said it was going to be a scorcher. So our thermostats were telling us that the next day they would go up a few degrees for a few hours in order to use less air conditioning. Nest calls it a rush hour. That's because it's the time when supplies on the Texas grid can become stretched thin.
People are coming home and turning on everything, their TVs, their air conditioning. We run into a little bit of a supply problem.
Marita Mirzatuni is with the Environmental Defense Fund in Texas. Her group has been pushing for more innovative energy use in the state.
During the summer, AC from residential and small commercial can run anywhere from 50 to 70% of the load. So it's substantial.
But what if you could shift power use? What if you could incentivize people to use less power during that time of peak demand? That's what the Nest Thermostat and its partners in Texas are doing. Scott McGarrigan is director of business development with Nest Labs.
Heating and cooling is about half of most homes' energy use. So having the ability to control that biggest single energy user is going to have the greatest impact.
Austin Energy gives you a rebate of $85 if you buy a Nest and enroll in the demand response program. Every bit helps because the thermostat isn't cheap. The latest model retails for $250. The rush hours are only on weekdays and only for a few hours. If you're home, you can always override it and turn the AC back up, but few do. And Nest cools down your house ahead of the rush hour as well. It saves the customer money, and it saves the utilities money, too.
Those power companies have to pay really high prices in the afternoons to get you that power.
Again, Michael Weber with UT.
So they do have some incentive to reduce your peak demand because they're paying high prices, and they can't always pass those prices on to you. They might be losing money.
Austin isn't the only utility in Texas doing this. One private power provider, TXU, is offering customers free power at night or on weekends in exchange for higher base rates during the rest of the week. Others are paying customers not to use power during peak times. Programs like this, along with increased energy efficiency in homes and appliances, are big factors in why power demand hasn't grown as expected in the state.
We're experiencing overall an increase in consumption because there are more people, but the growth of that consumption is what appears to be slowing.
Ken Anderson is a commissioner with the Public Utility Commission of Texas, which oversees power generation in the state. The residential energy saving programs that have popped up in the market weren't the work of the commission or any guidance from the state legislature. It happened from the bottom up, within the market, and that's fine by Anderson.
It doesn't surprise me that these programs are developing. It is the natural reaction to an entity that wants to minimize their risk. So what they're doing is partnering with their customers, you know, to hedge their market risk.
While the programs have started off small, they're already having an impact. At least 100,000 people have signed up for TXU's free nights and weekends. In Austin, AC use during the rush hours was cut in half for participants in the program. Now, the city and Nest are expanding it. Again, Scott McGarrigan with Nest Labs.
At the rate we are growing right now, we will be able to displace a small to medium-sized peaking power plant for the city of Austin.
Nest is expanding its demand response programs with the goal of reaching the whole country. It got a boost this month when it was bought by Google. The price tag? Over $3 billion. Reporting on energy and the environment for State Impact Texas, Terrence Henry, KUT News.
At the recent KERA debate of Republican candidates for lieutenant governor, a question was asked about allowing creationism in Texas public schools. This is despite a 1987 U.S. Supreme Court decision that rules creationism cannot be taught as a science. The candidates varied in their nuanced answers, but essentially all agreed that creationism should be taught in Texas public schools.
Now, we can discuss whether creationism should be taught in science or whether it should be taught in comparative religion or whether it should be taught in social studies. I don't really know the answer to that. But our children should be armed with more knowledge, not less.
I don't think we have to live in a state where we need to apologize for being a Christian. And I believe that creationism can be taught in our public schools in social studies if it violates what the courts have said as a science, because it is something that most Texans believe in, and our children need to be exposed to this, and we shouldn't have to hide from it.
You know, our children must really be confused. We want them to go to church on Sunday, and we teach them about Jesus Christ. And then they go to school on Monday. They can't pray. They can't learn about creationism. They must really be confused. And they have a right to be confused, because we, as Christians, have yielded to the secular left and let them rule the day in this country.
I happen to believe as a Christian in creationism, but I understand that it alone cannot be taught. And I am fine with teaching creationism, intelligent design, and evolution. And then let the students, with advice and counsel and the love of their parents, decide for themselves which one of the three that they believe in.
In order, that was Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson, Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples, State Senator Dan Patrick, and incumbent David Dewhurst, answering a question about supporting the teaching of creationism in Texas public schools at the recent GOP debate for candidates seeking the nomination for lieutenant governor. Some public schools in Texas are already teaching creationism, despite that's a violation of the Supreme Court ruling. That's according to science education activist Zach Coplin. Coplin recently wrote in Slate.com that the largest chain of charter schools in the state is openly teaching creationism as a science, as well as right-wing versions of history and civics. I reached out to Response Education Solutions Charter System to give them an opportunity to respond. They declined, but in a statement they said they are following Texas law, which allows for the examination of all sides of scientific evidence relating to the theory of evolution, both for and against. I spoke to Zach Coplin about his article. Coplin is a college student and has campaigned to keep creationism out of public school science classrooms and has been involved with other separation of church and state causes.
So Responsive Education Solutions is the largest charter program in the state of Texas. It has over 65 schools, 17,000 students, and is getting $82 million from the public yearly. And it's only expanding. It's got 20 more schools coming in 2014, and for the next few years is allowed to expand almost unlimitedly. And so this school is teaching what I see as creationism. They undermine the theory of evolution. They call it unproved dogma with no experimental evidence, which is not true, and say that leading scientists doubt the theory of the age of the earth, which is also not true.
then they go on to suggest that many scientists see supernatural creation or intelligent design as a alternative, and it's an equally valid school of thought in the science community, which is completely untrue. And the goal is to mislead students and make them think that creationism is scientific. And that just cannot happen in a public school. That's unconstitutional. And it's bad science.
This couldn't happen in a regular public school because the standards are there. But when you're a charter school, I guess you have more latitude?
So it should not happen in a charter school either, because charters are also public schools. But Texas does not seem to be interested in having any accountability for their charter schools. And so they're being allowed to get away with this. But the standards, the school is actually defending themselves. They issued a response to my article, and they're defending themselves actually on with the Texas science standards and saying that the standards call for all sides of evolution to be taught, which is true. And I think these standards are absolutely terrible and should really be changed so that you can't undermine evolution with them. That does not actually provide a fig leaf to this organization, Responsive Ed, to teach creationism and undermine evolution the way they're doing. You still cannot violate the First Amendment and teach creationism, even if Texas science standards are bad. And really what they're teaching, I'd phrase it as stealth creationism. It's sort of the new way creationists try and sneak their materials in public schools.
Are they teaching like young Earth creationism, that the Earth is only 6,000 years old and the fossils that are there were put there by the devil to trick us?
So while they don't say anything like that explicitly, what they do is they, again, sow doubt. So they'll say leading scientists doubt the age of the Earth, while they don't say the Earth is 10,000 years old, but they imply that 4.5 billion number is very wrong to students. And so students can then, because if I'm a high school student and I don't really know much about evolution or science, and I don't have access to any biologists to really help me learn what I might be taught wrong, if my teacher says, well, some people think the age of the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, but many others doubt that, even if they haven't explicitly said it in class, they've undermined the science so much that you can be easily led to believe incorrect information.
Now, you also say that this responsive education solutions charter system, you see problems with the way they're teaching American history.
They teach ideologically biased and sometimes straight out just completely incorrect history, too. And so the one that really just got to me was this line where they explain the samurai were responsible for Japan's involvement in World War II, which is just incorrect because the samurai were disbanded after the Meiji Restoration almost 70 years before. And it's flat out wrong. One of my favorite lines is they explain Jimmy Carter pardoned draft dodgers out of a, quote, misguided sense of compassion, which is just like, what history book should, you don't explain your president had a, you don't talk about their sense of compassion as misguided, you don't say that in a history book because it's irrelevant. You say Jimmy Carter pardoned draft dodgers, and that's it. It's irrelevant. Or there's another book they use which explains that John Kerry's Purple Hearts were suspect at best, which at this point it's been exposed that Swift boat, none of the Swift boat people were even on his boat. So it's flat out wrong and ideologically motivated.
What kind of correction mechanisms are out there?
So the remedy I see is to have real accountability for charters in Texas, to remove bad charters like Responsive Ed and give it to good ones so we can actually make sure our students are learning. That's the only remedy I see, and I hope the state of Texas acts quickly to actually do this, because if they don't, Responsive Ed could be facing a lawsuit over its unconstitutional practices, and that would be far, far worse for Texas, for Responsive Ed, for everyone. And it wouldn't be a fun process. It would take time. It would take money. It'd be miserable, and it'd be much more embarrassing.
Zach Coplin is a pro-science activist and has campaigned to keep creationism out of public school science classrooms and has been involved with other separation of church and state causes. He recently wrote an article for Slate.com about Response Education Solutions Charter System, the largest chain of charter schools in Texas, teaching creationism with public funds. There's a link to that article on our website, tpr.org. Response Education Solutions Charter System declined coming on air to discuss this issue, but they did send a statement saying they are following Texas law that allows for teaching competing theories alongside of evolution. Their full statement is also on our website at tpr.org. Same-sex marriage has been okayed in California, and they're enchanted with it in New Mexico. There are still some legal hurdles, but that makes two states that border Texas finding the law that bans same-sex marriage unconstitutional. Also recently, the mayor of Houston, Anise Parker, the first openly gay mayor of a major city, married her longtime partner, Kathy Hubbard. The couple got married in Palm Springs, California, where same-sex marriage is legal. And some are asking the question, when will it become legal in Texas? On February 12th, a federal judge in San Antonio has agreed to hear a case filed by two same-sex couples in Texas seeking to overturn a state constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. 2 days shy of Valentine's Day, the court will hear arguments in the case seeking to nullify the 2005 amendment that defines marriage as solely the union of one man and one woman. You might think Texas conservatives who oppose same-sex marriage are feeling the walls closing in on them, and you would be wrong. Jonathan Sines of Texas Values says despite what many are seeing in the mainstream media, same-sex marriage is losing the fight in the culture war.
Not in Texas. The recent court rulings have, there were two court rulings against same-sex marriage and same-sex benefits in Houston. So I'm not seeing any victories in the state of Texas on this issue.
But all around Texas, you know, Oklahoma, New Mexico, there have been rulings favoring same-sex marriage. Other states.
Talking about Utah, what the Supreme. So, I mean, well, if you want to talk about what the court's done, let's talk about what the Supreme Court did in Utah. They made it very clear that any state constitutional amendment that would be overturned would be stayed. So, and I thought that was very striking. I think Sotomayor was in charge of that, sending that back to Utah, making it clear that the Supreme Court would not allow a state constitutional amendment to be overturned by the federal court, at least not at this point.
And that also opened up for taking this argument up further to the Supreme Court so they can...
Well, we don't know that that will happen. All we know is that the Supreme Court denied this effort to allow for same-sex marriage in Utah while that case is pending. So that I would say that's a clear defeat for the same-sex marriage. So you had two defeats in Texas. You had a defeat in Utah, which I think is very interesting because, you know, this suggestion that there's all this momentum when there's no evidence of it. The only change that we've seen across the country is that judges have turned into legislators from the bench. They have engaged in serious judicial activism. I don't know that we've seen any significant change about what the American people feel on this issue. The only reason we've seen some changes in a few states is because judges have decided to take the will of the people away and make those decisions on their own. And so we saw that in California. We saw that at the U.S. Supreme Court. Five judges made a decision. In the state of Texas, when the people got to vote, they went to the polls, and 76% confirmed that marriage is between a man and a woman, as it's always been. And so some of these developments we've seen, I think, is because you see the homosexual advocates becoming very desperate and very impatient because the country is not moving with them. As a matter of fact, when this was put on the ballot in North Carolina, President Obama himself, I believe, was there pushing to try to get same-sex marriage to be approved, and they lost big time, the homosexual advocates did. So it seems the only thing that is supplying any shred of momentum, if it even exists, or any positive news for the homosexual advocates is because you have some judges that have forgotten what their role is, and they're acting inappropriately.
So let me just summarize where I think that where you're at on this. You're denying or you're saying that there is no momentum, there is no great shift in America favoring, allowing for same-sex marriages. I know that in 2013 there was a Gallup poll that found that 53% of Americans did favor allowing same-sex marriages, and that was up from 27% in 1996. So that's a huge shift very quickly. But in Texas, where opponents of gay marriage still outnumber supporters. That's 56 to 35%. So Texas is not going along with this national trend.
Well, and the other, I mean, what we've, the only thing, reason I think we've seen some change in the reporting and things as far as gay marriage is because you've seen people that are even in a judicial position or in an elected position abusing their power. That's what you've seen President Obama do, refusing to enforce certain laws, selectively deciding to force his will and his morality on other states like Texas that have defined marriages between one man and one woman through his perceived power with the federal government. You've seen that in Houston, a mayor who is clearly violating state law and violating a city charter to not recognize same-sex marriages in Texas or give benefits based on that. She's decided to do it anyway. People have speculated maybe it's because she's a lesbian and she's now married that she's advancing her own personal agenda. Whatever the case may be, she's violating the law. So you've got President Obama doing that. You've got judges that are violating the law or overstepping their bounds as far as their role. And so that's the only reason I think you've seen some change. Whether or not some of these polls have show any difference, you know, people have polls all the time that are inaccurate. So, you know, there may be some changing views, but it is nothing close to this perceived momentum that people are talking about. And that's why it's so important for people to remember the value of the rule of law. And it really is about what the will of the people is.
Jonathan Sines is the president of Texas Values, a conservative nonprofit group dedicated to preserving and advancing a culture of family values in the state of Texas. The new Texas Almanacs are here. The new Texas Almanacs are here. Every 2 years, the Texas State Historical Association publishes the volume filled with facts, figures, and maps of the Lone Star State. Elizabeth C. Alvarez is the Almanac's editor.
Well, the Texas Almanac is a pretty big book. It's 752 pages, and it has sections on all different aspects of Texas, of life in Texas, of the environment, recreation, politics, agriculture, education, culture. We've got feature articles, a couple of feature articles, one on Texas art, mostly from the 19th century and early 20th century, and then another article on some of the big historic ranches of Texas with just some short vignettes about each one. And we always update everything with each edition. We come out every 2 years, so all the population figures are updated and all the, you know, wage information and business stuff, agriculture. We spend 2 years updating everything.
You say it's loaded with this information, and you would say, well, you know, I could just Google that information if I need it. But as you page through the almanac, you wouldn't know to Google some of these things. It's just so interesting, and it's just, I didn't know that, or it's just there.
I've heard people say that, well, I just didn't even think about this, or I didn't think, you know, about this topic or that topic. You know, for example, we've got, you know, in the government section, we have a list of correctional institutions and how many prisoners are there and how many employees. I mean, it's kind of interesting to look at, but you wouldn't necessarily even know where to get that information. In fact, some of this, there is a substantial amount of information in the almanac that is not on the internet, that we get from our sources, and sometimes they have to, you know, put it together for us and give it to us in a format, and then I've got to put it into my format. But, for example, like those correctional institutions, that's not something you find on the internet. I get that from my sources at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Some of the agriculture information and the weather information, they give it to me. They prepare it for me, and they have for decades. And our maps, we have a map for every county, and those are real detailed. You've got all the towns, all the little creeks, the little local roads and everything, and they're very, very detailed. And even your TxDOT maps, county maps, aren't like that. So
Yeah, so if I was ever going to do a Bonnie and Clyde kind of try and run from the law kind of a thing, this would be the book to have, because you'd know every back road in Texas on this.
That's right. Even the railroads are on there. In fact, a funny story is I actually have a certificate from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice saying that the Texas Almanac is banned in their prisons because it's considered to be escape paraphernalia. So we're banned.
That's a great endorsement.
Yes, exactly. But maps are so good that you cannot be allowed in the prison system.
But you're not banned in newsrooms, because really no newsroom is complete without having the current copy of the Texas Almanac. And I guess I would say the same thing for libraries, but also bars. You can't have a because of all the sports information, the detailed sports information about Texas, and especially like the minor leagues that we have. Other states, do they have almanacs as comparable as us? Is this something that Texans can be especially proud of?
You know, Texas can be proud of this. There are a couple that have, I think Oregon has a state almanac that's pretty good. A lot of states have what they call like a blue book or a gold book, where they mostly just list government officials and agencies. But to get into all these other aspects of Texas, like business and culture, and in addition to government, and then have these profiles of every county and then the sports and the recreation. That's really, I've never seen another one like that. And of course, our weather coverage and our environmental coverage, and then having, the feature articles. We do different ones. We kind of have a theme for each edition. And this time it's kind of Western art and ranches. And we have a Frank Ray painting on the front of this cover that shows a cattle drive called a scene on the Brazos, crossing the Brazos River. And so we really kind of highlight some different topics with each one. And I've never seen that in other almanacs. And I don't know that any other state almanac or blue book goes back as far to, that started as far back. 1857 is, not that long after Texas became a state.
Right.
And it was even published pretty regularly through the Civil War. There were some volumes published during that time, too. So some of those old ones are fun to go through. One of the things we've done this year is do electronic versions. So you can go to Amazon and get a Kindle version or an EPUB version, and we also have it on a CD. It's a PDF version on a DVD that you can just drag to your desktop. And I love sitting with a book and reading, and I love sitting down with the almanac and looking at it. But when I really want to find something fast, sometimes I pull up that DVD version, and boy, you can search in a second, find something. So I really enjoy actually using the electronic versions, too. And that's a first this year.
Elizabeth C. Alvarez is the editor of the Texas Almanac. The 2014-2015 edition was recently published, and she's already working on the 2016-2017 edition. And that's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to Texas Matters with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also comment directly on our show page at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.